Hi, how you doing? Congratulations. You've tuned in to Bob and Nick's Talk Hypnosis podcast. Thanks. You crazy cats are in for a treat. Wow.
Never get tired of these guys. Absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. Hi, everybody. How are you? It's Bob here of Bob and Nick, senior member here. Nick, you want to say hi to the guys?
Hello, everybody. Good to be back. We've had a little break, a little hiatus.
Yeah, hiatus. Look at you, hiatus. I love it.
Yep. Hiatus. Don't know how to spell it, but I'm going to use
it. Isn't it? It's like a small break. It's like a break between two times. It's like a rest. Hiatus, I love that word. I think it's Welsh. It comes to that part, the hiatus flanfeir with Gwynguth Gwgerig, something like that. It's lovely, I love it.
I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, I concur.
Let's talk to the guys. What have we been doing, Nick? What do we want to tell the people about?
Well, we've had a break because, a week and a half break, because, or 2 week and a half, 2.5 week break, should I say, because...
It's been five weeks since we were last on.
Yeah, 5 weeks since we were last on.
It's been a week and a half.
And, well, it's actually, it's been 2.5 weeks, Bob.
It's been about two weeks.
Anyway, we digress. Yep. So.
Boy, can we run a radio station?
So, here's the thing. We've had the UK Hypnosis Convention. You've had a workshop. How did that go, Bob?
It was great.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was great. I did a one day with the Jacquins, Freddie Jacquin and, me fingers, Auntie Jacqueline.
That's it.
And that was great. So what we did is we decided to do this just for the hell of it. We took the group of people, nearly 30 people, and we divided them down the middle. And, you know, we met again at lunchtime, changed over the classes. And then the last hour we had a Q&A. I couldn't get a word in for the Jacquins. You know what they're like? Jesus, these guys. These guys go on and on and on, you know. Anyway, it was a great day. We absolutely loved it. I think it was good. I've got a dog.
Sorry about that.
It's on me.
We are live, and the dogs have seen something in the front garden that they're not happy with. It's actually the wife.
Ooh. Really?
Should we keep this in, Bob, or should we do it again?
Keep it in. But keep will, in. Will anybody hear us?
there's the little pug piping up at the end. Yeah, so, and to be fair as well, you're being very modest. There was actually people walking in to register in the convention when they realised that they could still have the afternoon with the Bob Burns. They were actually registering even sort of mid-morning. So your class actually grew at lunchtime, isn't it?
Did you know that, did you? No, I did not. And I'm looking at my check now. It didn't come out in the check. I don't think there's any monies, anything extra there.
Well, Bozo was running it. It's down the bottom. It's called Prorated. And it's...
You...
There you go. I'm on fire today.
Hiatus pro rata. Come on, you Greek monster. I love it. Bring
Big
it on.
Speak. Mr. Big yeah. Speak. Yeah, so yeah. It, and the feedback was really good as well, Bob.
It was good, yeah. It was really a great time. And from my one, I'm sure the boys will get even more. But I've got about 7 or 8 people coming up for private mentoring next year. It's going to be great. So to all you guys, we've been chatting a lot over the weekend. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be great.
Fantastic. Well, that's great. So... Does that mean I'm going to have to book you again for next year, Bob?
There you go. You see, this is my own fault. Assuming it makes an arse out of you and me. That's what I've been doing. I was assuming I was automatically there again. Yep.
We'll see. It's a very strict process.
It is a strict process. You're going to have to think of a speaker, a main speaker for next year. So we had Adam last year, me this year,
yep.
At the dinner on Saturday. Any ideas? Are you allowed to give us any clues?
They will be human.
Mm-hmm.
I have got a few ideas. I've got a few ideas kicking around. I don't know if I'm gonna go off tangent a little bit. There's one that I'm thinking of that I'm not going to say. Because if they say no, everyone else won't know how much I hate them.
Well, I'm just going to write. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to put you off anything. So I'll write it on a piece of paper so you can see it through the screen, yeah?
Right, okay.
I think you should get them. I think they'd be brilliant.
Wow. If I could get them, I would get them. But,
absolutely.
Wow. I mean, that's going to be our secret now, Bob. Our little secret. But, so what did you think of the convention anyway?
It was great, you know. I arrived late, I'd been busy. It's my own fault, no one else's, but as you're probably aware, on the Saturday I spent most of my time writing up the stuff for the speech I was doing at night, so I saw nothing on the Saturday. Just stayed in my room writing the speech and drinking voluptuous amounts of red wine and getting stuff sent to me. And of course, on the night, of course, we were running late, weren't we? So my apologies to people out there, but I had to dump a little bit of stuff. By the time I was on, it was about 10:30, quarter to 11 or something, yeah. And I realised I wanted to go to the bar, so instead I just went for all the cheap laughs, as cheap laughs as I could possibly get, and we went to the bar and had a ball. On the Sunday as well, I had only enough time to do the afternoon things. I had a couple of private clients, as you know, arrived there. So again, I was working in my room. I'm not going to do that ever again. I'm just going to go to everything the next thing. So I went and saw both the Jacquins and Tim A. Cummins at the very end, going completely wild with everybody. That was great, isn't it? So I saw the Jacquins and Tim A. Cummins. There's a few people there. I feel really bad. I feel really, really guilty. There's a few people that I've never managed to sit through a whole session with them. Bill and Inez, two good friends of mine, and yeah. I'm going to put that right the next thing. Do you know what? I hear some great things about Gary Turner, and I've never sat through one of Gary's sessions. I've never had the opportunity to. And again, but I'm going to put that right next year. The little Colesy boys, Gary Coles, and some of the other names that I've never got the chance to. I've sat through Melissa Tears once, and it was great. I'd like to do that again. I was very impressed with James Stepp a couple of years ago when I went to one of his things. There's just so many there. In fact, some of the names that I don't even know of. It's ridiculous. I'd like to go and find out who they are. Some of the lesser known names, and nearly always you get a really nice surprise, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm going to spend next one. I'm going to go to. I'll be in one room, absolutely doing everything. I'll be taking no time off. I won't have that much to do myself, so I'm going to take. I'm going to take everyone, as many as I can, on board. But dump the Jacquins. I'm sick of the Jacquins.
Yeah,
dump them.
Sick of the sight of them guys.
Sick of the sight of the Jacquins. So I'll see some other guys.
They were popular.
They were great. They're just rock and roll, aren't they?
Yeah, Freddie, last man in the bar again. Last man standing again.
I think you'll find it was me. I think Freddie just tipped over before it was me. I was the last man to leave. Yep.
Wow. The two oldies seeing everybody off.
I was walking about myself, and I do that. You know that Echo song. Hello, where's me? Then when I know there's no one left, boom! Jump over the bar. Help myself to a quick drink and then into the lift. That's the way it always happens for me.
Okay, just for the recording, that was a lie. Bob didn't steal any alcohol last weekend. But do you know what? You're saying about getting a chance to watch these presentations. Last year, I got the chance to watch probably about 5. This year, more organised, I've watched 0 presentations. And do you know how frustrating that is? Especially when I've spent the last few days looking at the feedback forms of these presentations and realising the realisation that I've missed out on 40 hours generally of excellent presentations. And I didn't get to see one of them. I got to hug all of the presenters, but I didn't actually get to see one of their presentations.
Yeah.
Well, saying that, I hung out with Gary on the Monday. He did his therapy protocol workshop,
you told me that was great. Yeah,
that was really good. Yeah, but yeah, I didn't get to see any, and going through, you know, it was really cool to have certain people that I couldn't get there last year. I tried to lure there last year, people like Shawn Michael Andrews and Mike Mandel. I never got to make contact with him last year. They were both there, hugely popular, hugely.
Well, Mike Mandel was there with his partner Chris. That's his business partner. You know, they're both. I mean, Scotland were the first to recognise stuff like that. Anyway, but that was his business partner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, just for the record.
And Shawn Michael Andrews, of course, is just one of my all-time favourites. I'm disappointed I missed out on him as well. What an absolute gentleman.
And what an absolute ambassador of the profession.
He is. And he, you know what he was telling me? In fact, you know the story. He says, you know, I'm a little bit nervous going on. I says, you're Shawn Michael Andrews, for God's sake. But he explained what he was talking about. He says, the quality here is so good. And it was really nice of him to say that. Although you can never imagine Shawn Michael Andrews nervous, or at least nervous enough that he couldn't handle it in about 15 seconds. Yeah.
Well, I've got to say this about it. I said to the wife, I said, he's either the nicest man in the world, or the best actor in the world, because he is just nice.
Whoa! It's a good point. Let's have a think about that. Is Shawn Michael Andrews a con man? Are we still going live here?
I think, yeah. I think the words I used were best actor. Not con man.
No, he's great. He's great. You just got to love that guy. Yeah.
I'm just texting my lawyer now. No, he is. He's a lovely, lovely gentleman. And do you know what also was good as well? You had people like the James Browns just giving a different take on stuff. There was a real international feeling. You had the guys from Brazil. Albert, I mean, there's a guy who's got nearly 500,000 followers in Brazil. Yeah. Alberto. And obviously, so there's plenty that we can learn from him.
Yeah.
And some of the relatively new names, just reading their feedback there, like Sarah Swanton and that, not the easiest slot to play when you're against the great Bob Burns, but apparently she did an amazing job preventing burnout. So there you go. Mm-hmm. We all suffer from that occasionally.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, there was just it's been so refreshing and encouraging to see that the stress was actually worth the while, and people did pretty much wholly embrace all of the presentation.
Yeah,
Jorgen Rasmussen as well. There was another one. You know,
Jorgen's just the coolest guy in the world. He does his own thing, doesn't he? I'm not sure if he's ever had a mentor or anything like it. Jorgen Rasmussen is just a wee bit different from anybody else, you know?
Yeah, and do you know what? I was reading some of the comments online. People were actually, as they were with the Arrow and the Swan stuff on Friday, he had the two-hour slot on the Sunday, and they was taking his stuff and come Monday morning just putting it to practice. And that's what it's about, right?
It's about taking it, trying it, and seeing if it works. That's what it's always about. Back to just very quickly on James Brown. He did a thing... and all magicians will know what I'm saying, the name Tony Slidini. I watched him, I never got to see it, I watched it afterwards, I saw the clip of him doing the paper balls.
Oh yeah.
And I you know what, James is just perfect. He sweats the small stuff, and he would do when he's training. That's what all great magicians and mentalists do, they sweat the small stuff. I absolutely loved it, I was tickled and sent him a wee message on that, yeah, it was great.
And most importantly of all, he made it relative to hypnosis. He made it
relative completely relative to hypnosis. He's just got all the skills. He's the
He's
man
a nice guy
skills.
As well.
He's a lovely fella.
It makes me wonder.
I was happy to meet him.
It makes me wonder how him and Adam Eason can be such good friends.
I don't know why anyone can be good friends with, as we call him, the ginger gentleman. In fact, I've got a letter on that right here. Dear Bob. Oh, no, we'll put that away till later.
Oh dear, that was great. A lovely bit of banter on the Saturday night between you two
it's
guys.
Great. I love meeting up with the Arden. He just cracks me. He's just got this thing. He's got this look, this voice, these words, that amazing vocabulary.
Yeah.
That not even he understands.
Do you know what? Yeah, I mean, you know that he's up in his room learning words. He's repeating them in the lift as he comes down, like over and until they stick. And then he gets out the lift.
Big
I mean,
words.
That's, yeah.
Big words. I heard him in the lift. Before the lift doors open, I heard over and over again, Constitution, Constitution, Constitution. And, you know, that's what he does. He's skilled. His cutting edge is razor sharp.
He's a smart guy, though.
He's a smart guy.
And he's got a naughty little twinkle in his eye as well.
He has got a naughty little twinkle, but you said it. He's a smart guy. He loves my work. Fuck, he sent me. There's a letter he sent me. I'll read it another time, but you know, he was just saying that I'm the man. You're the man, Bob. I really mean it. Watcher. I don't know what that means. It's probably an English thing. and all of this, what I'm saying is evidence based. So you tickle me.
He certainly speaks better than he writes.
He speaks better than he writes. Yeah.
So yeah, he's so his super immunity presentation following you as well.
Yeah.
Wow, look at that. First day. Bob Burns, Adam Wilson, James Tripp.
Yeah.
Wow. And then Felix, Mike Mandel, Melissa Tears, and Alberto. Well, there's just one of the tracks on the Saturday. And we could... All three of the tracks equally as strong and diverse.
Yeah. Wow.
So it was good fun. Everyone was a little jaded and a little tired on Monday. Like we just discussed, everyone seemed to have picked up little tips, little tricks.
Yeah.
Broaden their horizons.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, it was good because on Monday, I jump into my car and I drive 570 miles. So everything just goes over my head again and again and again and again and again. Mm. So, yeah, no, it was a great trip. So, and I'm really looking forward already to it happening next year.
Mm. So,
come on, Nick. Get involved. Come on, you're going to love it. Next year will be better. It'll be the third one.
If I do... There's going to be a few things that I need to change, as you know. If there was a third one, there's going to be improvements on the second, as the second one improved on the first. I've taken it on board. We need more women present. But the problem is, like I explained to a few people, I can only use what's in front of me. And I think there was like 70% of applications were men. And so on balance as well. In the second year... We're also still trying to grow the convention. The third year is going to be a bit different. We've got to that level now where we can just make it slick. It's not about numbers now. The focus isn't on numbers. It's about just keeping that bar raised as high as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to get this dinner thing right. 2 years running, we started late. That obviously threw you because you was the main event and a great main event, may I say.
Yeah, but I already knew that when I went on, I'd have to dump things. So for the next guy or girl... who gets up there, we need to give them a real good run at it. So starting earlier, would that help? What time did they sit down for the meal?
Well, we were supposed to be sat at 8. It's
late to sit at a meal. It's okay for people coming across town, but most of the people were there, yeah?
Yeah.
So 8 o'clock, I think, is late.
Yeah, and we tried to actually get them in earlier, like 10-2. We tried to get off, but, you know, people just stand outside finishing their drinks. The biggest...
I was going to say, stop calling it dinner, call it supper. And supper time in Scotland is 5:15. It's always 5:15.
Yeah, it just hasn't got that same grandiose ring to it.
Because if you say it like that, it's 5:15. Supper time is 5:15. I think that would work.
Maybe we could have you coming over the tannoy at 5:15.
Don't remember 5:15. Remember 5:15.
It's going to be a bit disruptive for the 5:15 presentations we had going that day.
Well, put the worst people on at 5:15, and we start the dinner at the same time. Please edit that.
Yeah,
those words meant to come out and words meant to stay in.
That's going
to
hang for a year.
No. That's words that were meant to stay in.
It's going to hang for a year, and then the timetable comes out and goes. I'm one of Bob's bad ones.
Yeah, sorry about that, Anthony. That was words that should never have come out.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we'll go down the buffet route. As well.
It's not the worst, but then you've got long queues. I think it would be quicker. I don't think there's too many people worried about the meal itself. I'm not having a pop here, Nick. It's got nothing to do with you, and it's nothing to do with the Hilton per se. But the meal was kind of okay. All of these meals are kind of okay, you know. It's not if you're going out for a night out and a meal, that would not be it. So the buffet thing would work for lots of people. They want to get in there. They want to have fun. They want the speakers coming on early. They want to hit the pub or whatever they're going to do, and then the fun begins, I think, you know.
Yeah. Well, maybe we could do that and sort of combine it into maybe a sort of disco-y thing or something, so we can get it done in and out and have some music playing. I don't know. It's things to consider. Lovely, nice problems to have, though, if we get the same numbers. And a lot of people have expressed an interest. A lot of people... are expressing regret that they didn't get involved this year. So let's see what happens.
And one small thing, Nick, I don't think I've mentioned this to you yet. I heard from a couple of ladies at dinner on the Sunday that they were mildly disappointed. They felt that some females, trainers, etc., it weren't getting as much mentions as the male presenters. By the way, I'm not making a judgment in that. I never thought about it. So that's enough for me to go, maybe, I don't know. Maybe we should ask some people.
Well, do you know what? You know me, Bob. I'd like to be quite honest. Even when I came back and I checked in with the wife, because she is ultimately the boss, and I listen to everything she says, and she made the point that she was worried that, because it was 2 years running, and obviously certain people are playing ongoing roles and contributions, that she said that I should be wary of any cronyism, for a start. You know, some the boys all patting each other on the back. And I totally take that on board.
Absolutely,
with the women, you know, I would love to have a female keynote speaker if there is someone out there who wants to do the job. And obviously as well, more female presenters. But it's to get in the balance right of the number of actual applicants. And also, I still have to run it as a kind of business, in other words, putting bums on seats. So, you know, what do you do when you've got a Mike Mandel and a James Tripp and a Shawn Michael Andrews and Anthony Jackman? They all want to speak.
You just mentioned four names, but you dressed two of them up in women's clothing. And I think that's the problem solved.
Well, I didn't think
thank
of it.
You.
Yeah, thank you.
Because
yeah.
You're not fast. You're South London, that's why.
We could have Michaela Mandel.
Michaela Mandel, get in there.
Yeah, we go.
Yeah.
Anthea Jaquin.
Anthea would love that, yeah.
He would love that.
But seriously, we need to have a good think on that.
And Barbara Burns?
I've been there before. That's my earlier life, and we're not going to go there again. But seriously, if there's anyone listening in and you want to give us any ideas on that for the UK Hypnosis Convention itself, this, of course, is to Nick. It's got nothing to do with me. Please come in and let us know about that. That would be really, really... In fact, it's about what you think. Nick's the guy who makes the decisions. He's the guy who presses the button. He's the guy whose money is on the line there. But yeah, your ideas would be really, really welcome. Yeah.
I will say, and I'm not trying to defend myself here, because I do believe there should be more female presenters, and I'm absolutely going to make a point of making sure that happens. But I did approach three of the female presenters that presented last year to come back and do it again, but because of other commitments, they couldn't. Not just because they were fantastic presenters, but also the subjects that they were presenting on were hugely popular. So, you know, maybe I can entice them back.
Well, let's see. Let's make the call. You know, as we say, do it now. Do it now.
Mm. So, yeah, and also there is someone else that attended who didn't make the final cut. In fact, a couple of people didn't make the final cut, and one of them's another presenter, to a female presenter to the roster. So I sound like I'm trying to convince myself, but it really is a case of numbers of applicants and a meritocracy. I can't just also let people present because they're female. That would be even more condescending, so...
Here's an interesting thing, Nick. This is last night. I haven't seen my emails for ages, but our brother or sister group over in America, they are HypnoThoughts. They have theirs in late August, so August, September, October. 2 months after they finished, they closed the gate on the 30th of October with all the presenters in. That's interesting, isn't it? So with 2 months, they already have all presenters that they know of and accepted and booked. They do an interesting thing there. Where the presenter themselves, although they've got almost free convention, they pay a sum of money themselves to go to qualify for themselves. I think it's a brilliant idea. So let's say it's something like $100. I pay it, as I did last night, in fact. Mm-hmm. So that's me in there. But I'll get something off that in my very first talk, in fact, the whole of that. Yeah. So it's well done. Forget about that. Forget about the money thing. I'm not talking about that. What I am talking about is within 8 weeks of them finishing their convention for next year, they have all the presenters in and registered. It's pretty, pretty cool, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Scott Sandlin and Richard and that, they do a great job over there.
Yeah.
They're working in a different environment. They've got Vegas. I've got East London.
My
you know, the Vegas equivalent in the UK is Blackpool. I mean,
well, you know, but here's the funny thing about Blackpool. Blackpool is loved. The magic convention in Blackpool is the biggest magic convention, biggest three-day magic convention in the world. So there you go. And what have they got there? You know, they're saying cheapest chips, and it is. Everything's cheap. They go in there, you know, you've got beer at £1 a pint. Mm.
Here's the other dilemma, though, that what Hypno Thoughts have got because of that and the scope, because obviously staying in something like the Orleans, right, where they do it, you can get a room for next to nothing. They've got size. And also that, I think they've got 11 or 12 tracks of presenters. I've already sort of made the point of reducing the tracks and listening to some of the feedback. I think it worked this year. I'm not saying mine's the quality convention, theirs is the quantity convention, but there is that to weigh up, that getting the balance right of quality and quantity.
Absolutely. I mean, the beds there, we got two king-size beds in our room at $40 a night.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I know, because you already know this, Nick, on the Sunday night after the convention finished, I said, I'd like to stay another night. How much is that? They wanted £360. It's ridiculous.
And people don't realise that, actually, the reason that the first and the second one were held at the Hilton in Canary Wharf is that, hands down, that was one of the more economical options, as in terms of venue and terms of places to stay. Maybe we look elsewhere. Maybe we'll go to another city, a major city. Maybe we'll go somewhere coastal.
It's the UK. It could be another country. Swansea and Cardiff Rock, Edinburgh's there for you, or Glasgow. And why not cross the water to Ireland?
There was even an emotional pitch for Belfast.
Belfast is cool, you know. I mean, I'm a Dublin boy because I've been there a lot of the times, and I was used to go through Belfast at the times of the Troubles. But I'm told by good friends that Belfast is... they're Irish people. They're just gorgeous. They're just... Yeah. They do nothing but welcome you wherever you go. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, anyway, there's something to think about. Now, Bob, I think we spoke enough about the convention. So, we've got a guest that you've lined up this week, right?
Yes, we have. Now, and as you know, Nick, for many years now, I have been... I talk about it in my own workshops. I talk a little bit about it, but I've never workshopped it, and I want to as of next year. Rather, I want to pull an expert in to do it. He came along once and did a talk at Lorraine Gleeson's gig in Portsmouth. Lorraine was on a couple of weeks ago, and he was great. He just rocked the place. So he's going to come on now. He's going to tell us about his world of lucid dreaming, and that's Hayden Ebert.
Great. Well, I'll tell you what, so I'll play a little jingle interlude.
And we'll get him on
straight into the interview.
Let's get straight into it. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic.
Cool.
So hey, we're back in the room. That wasn't too long, was it? So we've got with us right now an absolute lucid dreamer, a guy who does know what he's talking about. We get a lot of them online, and God knows I have to talk to them every week. But this is somebody that I know a fair bit about. Online, Nick, I'm going to introduce you to right now, Hayden Ebert, who's our boy for Lucid Dreaming. Hey, Hayden, how you doing? Okay.
Good, Bob. Thanks.
Nice to meet
you. Say hello,
Nick. Hi, Hayden. I've heard wonderful things about you.
That's good.
So let's get right into this. So, Hayden, it's Lucid Dreaming. It's next door to hypnosis. Lots of hypnotists know about it. I think it's the next big thing that's going to happen in hypnosis. I really do. As you know, you're a great lucid dreamer. I'm not so great a lucid dreamer, but I am a lucid dreamer. I lucid dream myself. So I want to ask you the first question. How did you get into lucid dreaming?
Well, it happened for me naturally, and I wasn't calling for it or anything like that. But when I was about, I've been at it a long time now, and this was when I was about 16 years old, I was just sat on the end of my bed one day, just getting ready for the day ahead, you know, just getting dressed and that sort of thing. And I looked over towards the window that morning, and I had a weights bench in my room at the time. Didn't really use it very much, but I had a weight bench in the room, and it had some plants on it, just potted plants on there. And I decided I knew when I looked over there, because I saw them, I thought, I knew that I'd cut them down a few days prior. So and sort of, you know, got rid of them. And I knew they weren't there anymore. And I looked over and they were there. And it was just that little anomaly that just struck me. And I thought, how can that be? And I couldn't think of any way why it could be. So it kind of brought about a questioning, sort of a rationalisation. Why are they there? And that was the thing that triggered, well, it can't be reality in some way. I know it's a strange thing for sort of your mind to compute, but it was just what came up. And with that, it was like everything was crystal clear. It was as if it is now, really, except perhaps with a bit more of a glow to it. And it was like, you know, with that, I just sort of, at that moment, kind of realised it was. It was flooded with sort of a bright light, and the hues of the light were really, really different to sort of reality, if you like. And I remember at that point realising what was going on, and without thinking about it, just beginning to float in the air around the bedroom. And I sort of began to float, you know, all around the room. And the only thing, I hadn't even heard of lucid dreaming at the time. I had heard of out-of-body experiences and those sorts of things. They're very, very closely related. We'll talk about that later. But, I mean, that was all I thought was going on. I thought, oh, I'm having an out-of-body experience here. And as I looked back, I was still led on the bed. So my body led on the bed asleep. I've not had that very often since, but at that point there, I saw myself asleep on the bed whilst I was floating around the room like a spaceman in zero gravity. And I did that just for a little while, just floated around the room, and then I thought, oh, this is really weird. And something about that, because I've never experienced anything like it before, and it was like, whoa, this is a bit strange. And I remember then going back to think, oh, I want to get back, you know, and I led back down on top of myself and then just sort of kind of shook myself back in, and then I just came to. And I was back in the sort of waking world, and I just thought, whoa, you know, it was one of those things where you think, what has just happened? And that really sort of made me think about what it meant to be awake, what it meant to be asleep. And, you know, was I asleep? Was I dreaming? What was it? I didn't even know what that experience was at the time. But it certainly piqued the old interest. So, you know, I went in hunting down information about it and what kind of went on. So I started reading about stuff. Internet was pretty slim on the ground at the time. There wasn't really much of info, but I didn't know the internet was around so much then. You know, I just only didn't have a computer or anything like that. But I went to a bookshop that was in town. I think it used to be called Stellar Gateway. It was like a spiritual bookshop, so it had lots of New Agey stuff in there. And this was by chance. It wasn't specifically because I was looking for it because of that experience, but I went in there and I came across a magazine called Kindred Spirit at the time. And I came across this article in there, which was by Stephen LaBerge. Most people who are in the know about things know of him. And it was about lucid dreaming, and it sort of pretty much describes, you know, the experience that I just had. So I found out that he had a book that he'd written, or a couple of books that he'd written at the time. So I went straight out and ordered that, and that was called Exploring the World of Lucid Dreaming. So he's a Stanford PhD guy, did his PhD, his doctorate in lucid dreaming. So he had a pretty good knowledge base on it. They'd done a lot of study on it. He'd been doing it since the 70s. And there was loads of practical techniques and what have you in there. So I, you know, I started studying that and took that in, you know, deeply, because it was one of the things I just thought, wow, this is pretty amazing stuff. I've got to find out a bit more about it. So I was reading that intently and then studying what, you know, the techniques were in that. And then I, shortly after that, probably within a couple of weeks of the first one, I had my one. I actually induced myself through using the techniques that were in there. And that was, it was a bit short-lived, but it was one that I'd actually gone to bed purposefully with the idea that I want to have a lucid dream. I was using all of the awareness techniques, the checking for things that are out of place, which was exactly what happened in the first one. It was something that wasn't, you know, it wasn't quite right. So the reality, the surroundings were there, but there was something that just triggered that bit in me, the question as to whether it was reality or not. And that was pretty much exactly the same thing that happened the next time. So I'd come around in my bed the next time in the bedroom, I've gone downstairs, and I just remember going towards the front door of my house, and the latch on the door was just slightly different. There was nothing majorly different about it. It was something different, slightly different shape. And I remember at that point just opening that door, and so I opened the front door and thought, I'm dreaming. And I literally, as I came to that realization, I shot up into the air about 3 foot, and I was sort of suspended in this porchway, which we had on the front of the house. And that porchway, like, flooded with this really bright light, is all I can describe as just bright white light. And, you know, I floated there for a second, and I was literally saying, I'm dreaming, and I was sort of like suspended in this space. And I just found myself going out, I'm dreaming. It was a really fantastic experience. And I remember from that, then I wake up literally saying, I'm dreaming, out of my physical mouth. And it all went from there, and ever since, hooked.
So let me ask you a question on that. One of my favourite movies is Inception, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about knowing when you're in, knowing when you're out, staying, yeah. knowing how to stay in, and now to be jacked out of it, if you like. And yeah. I don't know that this happens in Lucid Dreams in itself, but in Inception, they have, his one was a top, wasn't it? A spinning top.
Yes.
If the top keeps spinning and spinning and spinning, he knows he's in this form of lucid dream, if you like, this deeper state. So we can't get involved in a tutorial workshop right now, but do you have anything like that yourself, or is it mainly a checking process?
There's so many different things that will help you to recognise it's a dream or recognise the state.
Yeah.
Most of it is related to awareness, really. It's how aware mm-hmm. you are of your current condition. It's a technique, I suppose, if you like. But, I mean, checking on the fact of, you know, we don't check on our state at all as a matter of habit when we're awake. Mm-hmm. We rarely ask ourselves if we're dreaming.
It's great just point. Yeah.
We do, because we just take it, this is our reality. This is what it is, and there's no reason to question otherwise. But that is also a habit which we carry through when we're asleep. So when we are actually dreaming, we don't question our surroundings very much. So something strange can happen, but the old rationalization switch is off, and we don't realize that the things are strange. Though, taking the old saying, pigs flying, for example, if a pig flies past you in a dream, you just sort of look at it and think, oh, there's a pig flying by like you would a bird. You don't question it at all. And that is the reason you don't realise that it's a dream. Whilst if you did, you saw that pig fly by and you thought to yourself, that can't happen. There you are. You question it, and that can bring about the lucidity.
So just to clarify for the people listening, just to go into a little bit more detail, I have got a question for you in a little while about our listeners or on behalf of our listeners, but just to clarify, talking of that level of perception and that level of awareness, right? So mm-hmm. you are fully immersed as if it is your reality at that moment.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It feels as real as this reality. There's no different. I say no differentiation. Sometimes it can feel, this is again a strange concept for most people, but sometimes it can feel more real than this reality.
And so with that in mind, the second thing is interactivity. So if you think it's your reality, you're not just responding, you're actually interacting and in fact leading your own movements, your own contribution to that environment at that time.
You can absolutely steer in the direction you want to go. Yeah, you can. If you decide you're going to walk left, you walk left. If you're going to fly off to the right, you fly off to the right. You know, it's you have that autonomy as you do in waking reality.
Which is a little different to a dream where it does feel that there's an action and a response more, I would say, in a dream. Especially when you're recalling it, right? That there's more responsiveness.
It steers in a direction that you don't really have any control over. There's no awareness to it. Whilst in a lucid dream, you become aware of your surroundings. And if you choose to go one way or go another or talk to this person, talk to that person, you can. you know, which you may not have done had you not been aware of your state at the time.
Okay, cool. So you mentioned Stephen LaBerge before.
Yeah.
You said he had a couple of books out. What else can the listeners do to find out more or even get into or experience lucid dreaming?
I mean, there's a mass of information out now. I mean, back then when I first got into it, much less so. And I think with the internet and whatever else, there's a lot of information available. There's some really good authors out there on the subject. And there's, you know, there's a lot of info on how to access those stuff. But, you know, you ask them what they can do to get into that state or where they can find the info.
Really? So initially, if their interest has been piqued with this discussion, where they can go and look for more info, as you say, yeah. There's a number of books. And then, should they be interested? Should they want to pursue it further? Are there any like workshops or courses or out there at the moment? Or should we talk about that a bit later?
What I wanted to know was. You know, every now and again, Nick, we try and poke our poor guests who come on. And I want to do that now if I can with Hayden. I want to ask you, Hayden, if you're... would you be brave enough to step off the fence? If I was going to say to you, what are your beliefs? Are you comfortable enough in coming off that fence and making a declaration as towards your thoughts of what lucid dreaming actually is? Here's a big question. Is it real?
Is it real? Well, I've got a little saying that I always say relating to that, and I say that everything is real in the moment you experience it. And I truly believe that. If you experience something, for you, it's real. There's always this question between subjective and objective reality. But for a moment, if you have an immersive experience where you're experiencing it fully, it was real, at least in that moment. Somewhere in consciousness, it was real, right?
Yeah.
What do I believe about whether it's...
really real.
Sorry? Really real?
Really real.
More real, I would say, than this reality. I'd say we're stepping in here for a short period, which we call our life. And then our true reality is what is beyond this. It's what's beyond the physical, the non-physical, if you like.
Lovely. We're getting further off the fence now. I love it. And the thing is, what I'm really asking is, because there'll be a lot of great hypnotists listening to this. These are highly skilled people from around the world. And they'll be saying, I can hypnotize Tom or Dick or Harry and get them to believe that that is the reality. What I'm asking you, Hayden, is not just could it be a fake form of reality where they believe it's real? Do you think that lucid dreaming is, in truth, an absolute reality beyond this reality that we know here and now?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I believe that we all exist in a multidimensional universe, and we can access those realities via these states, these enhanced states of consciousness. We can access those states and exist in realities which are beyond this one. I'll relay a story, just one I had only the other day.
Yeah, please.
I literally felt as though I'd been in this altered state, in this, you know, you can call it out of body state, lucid dream, whatever. I was in this non-physical state, what felt like the whole night. And this experience I was in, I recall being at this building in a place of a different time, and I was given the name of this building. It was called the Sumo for some reason. I don't know what that was to do with, but that was the name I was given of this building. And it was the architecture to it was very modern, but at the same time it was built out of like a sandstone, very smooth and glass and all of that. It's akin to our contemporary sort of architecture, but this was in a different reality frame. And it felt very, very real, very solid. I didn't feel like I had to do any stabilization to retain the state or anything like that. And I lived there. My wife lived there with me. We had an apartment. She had a job. It was as though we actually lived there. I was fully aware that it was not normal reality.
Was it the wife from this life now?
It was, yeah, same wife, yeah. And we lived there. So it was all It was all very normal, but in a different reality frame. I felt this very, very familiar film feeling with it, so I felt like I'd been there numerous times before, although I can't recall any other experiences where I'd been to this place. And I remember being in our kitchen while we were there, and I remember thinking to myself, as I went out into the courtyard out the back, this is really nice, I really like it here, I could stay here, I could live here, I was thinking. So, and that, when I came to from that one, I just remember thinking, you know, this, that was so real, it was so real, but it was almost, I preferred it, if you like, to this one. I thought, this is really nice, I could stay here,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah. I love that. I absolutely love it. Yeah.
So I've got a final question, but to frame the question perhaps a little bit better, I do want to ask a couple more just in between. Now, now Bob may have made you aware, I am naturally a suspicious person, okay? Naturally a sceptical person. For instance, I don't believe my kids are my kids. I don't believe the wife loves me. And I'm not even sure Robert Burns is his real name. But here's the thing. I do know, as we briefly discussed before the interview, that there is real evidence. And for our listeners to know, you know, that it is a, lucid dreaming is a real thing. Okay, it's not some of this esoterical fluffy stuff. But listening to you there, my curious side, my questioning side, when you talk about alternate realities, first of all, you mentioned that it was the same wife.
Yep.
Would it always be the same wife in the reality that you step in, and why? And that probably leads to a bigger question before my final question. What purpose does this vehicle serve for us? What can we use lucid dreaming for? What benefits? You know, if you can move along timelines, for instance, to mm-hmm. learn lessons or this and that, what do you use it for?
Exploration of reality is what I use it for, and you know, not just reality, consciousness itself. Where are we going? I mean, you've got the questions that everyone wants answered in life. I think we all ask these questions of ourselves sometimes as to what are we doing here? Why did we come here? Where are we going? What happens after death? I think everyone asks those questions of themselves, whether they're, you know, someone who's deeply involved in this sort of subject or not. I think everyone will have those questions at some point in their lives, especially regards to what happens after death, for example. Especially when someone close dies or someone you know dies, that sort of thing, that will always bring those questions to you. What is this all about? Why are we here? And what are we doing? So why does our consciousness incarnate into the physical? I mean, that's, you know, ultimately, I guess what you're saying. And why do we have the, you know, like you say about having the same wife and those sorts of things in those other reality frames, I think you have a connection to the consciousness of, that's without doubt. Those bonds and whatever else you're going to carry over into that state, they don't just disappear. And this is one thing that's very becomes very clear to you as you practice this stuff and you have numerous experiences, is when you are no longer in your body, you are very much still yourself. So you don't have any you don't change. All your baggage goes with you. All your thoughts go with you. That is the only thing you have, is your state of mind when you cross over that threshold into non-physical reality. You're still yourself. So the only thing that you do take with you is your state of mind. So that's something we do have to work on here, very much so, if we're going to elevate ourselves to higher levels of awareness, higher levels of consciousness, when we no longer have the physical vehicle, which is when we do obviously die or transition, however you want to put it. We end up in that state. We live there. And we may move on to different states, different realities, who knows? But there is numerous multidimensional states that you can access in that place.
Okay. Ian, we're going to have to wind it there. I want to talk to you for a couple of minutes longer, but I think Nick, we're going to have to get him back another time as well to talk a little bit more about it. Is that okay?
Yeah, yeah. That's
because Hayden could talk for two solid days about this stuff.
Right, okay.
And it's the rest of the stuff that gets really interesting. But right now, We want to see if we can take it a step further right now. So, Hayden, I want to ask you, and I and Nick will definitely turn up for it. I'll pay. Nick won't pay, never mind. Do you have any workshops planned at some time in the future? You're based in Southampton, is that right? So
that's
do you
right.
have anything? Do you have anything planned for the turn of the new year on workshops on this?
Looking to put something together, maybe a 1 or 2 day workshop in March. So there'll be something to look forward to there if anyone's interested in that.
Okay, so let us know when that is. Nick and I will put that out either on this programme or the next one, and we'll pump it through and see what we can do something there, whether it's down south, London or whatever. That would be absolutely fantastic. So I just want to thank you for coming on board. It's quite fascinating, yeah, Nick?
I was just actually going to ask further on to the information about the March workshop. Is there any way, or are you open to people contacting you now, if we put contact details of an email or whatever, so people, if they've got questions that they want answered now?
Yeah, if anyone does want to ask any questions, I've got an email address which I will answer them on, which is outofbodystudies@gmail.com. Anyone's welcome.
And we'll get that out at the end of this programme as well, yeah.
Yep.
And hopefully if you can work something on the date over the next week or so, yeah, we can see if we can arrange something there. That would be great. That would be absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Okay. Nick Ebden, where are we now with you? Skeptical Sammy, are we closer to finding out a little bit more about it?
Well, I touched on it already. When Bob first spoke about lucid dreaming, I think he was expecting me to be shocked or pull a face or gurn a little or what have you. But funnily enough, like I'd referenced it already, the Richard Wiseman book, Night School, I encountered lucid dreaming then. And I like him. He's like one of these social psychologists. I like his stuff. The sleeping stuff in that book I use with my clients. I even tell them to go and buy the book. Which is a pain because they do and they never come back for a second session or a third session. But so, there's a chapter in the back of the book about, and he references Stephen LaBerge, about lucid dreaming and how you actually can follow steps to familiarise yourself with lucid dreaming. So I wasn't shocked. I do have to go off and have some thinking about, and like I say, I'll be gate crashing for free in March. So you know, it's something that I'd like to explore. It also does, and perhaps we'll go on and discuss it another time, it also does sit nicely with some of the sort of ultra-heighty, ultra-depthy elements of the hypnosis community a lot more than
absolutely.
I think.
Absolutely.
So there's definitely more to explore with it, that's for sure.
Yeah. So we're going to have to let Hayden go now. So I want to thank you for coming on here. It's been absolutely great to see you again and talk to you again.
Been a pleasure.
We'll talk real soon and we'll get that thing's tied up. So say goodbye, Nick, in your nicest possible way.
I'll try. Goodbye, Hayden. It's been an absolute pleasure. Lovely to meet you.
Absolutely brilliant. All the best here. Take care, buddy.
Cheers, Bob.
Hey, that was fantastic. We really must get... Because of what this is, this lucid dreaming thing, Hayden could have gone on for a couple of days. We must get him back on at some point to get more deeply involved in this one. Now, Nick, you are not a lucid dreaming boy. You've never been into that. You were absolutely honest about that. But after Hayden just doing his little chat, what's your feelings right now about it?
Well, you know, Bob, I'm one of the most cynical people in the whole wide world. But I was aware of lucid dreaming because of the Wiseman books, what have you, and some of the other literature. So I find it fascinating. You and I have had off-air discussions before in the past over the last few months about it. It's certainly not something I'm going to poo-poo. And it was really great to hear hear Hayden's conviction. And you know, people can't see him, but I can. He's a very straight, rational guy. And he absolutely believes what is occurring, as do millions of others, you know. What were some of the statistics I've pulled up that you might find interesting, you might not, Bob? But here we go.
Okay.
I think it's something like 50% of people will experience lucid dreaming at least once in their life, which is quite interesting. Yeah, there you go. And one in five on a monthly basis.
So So let me ask you a question. Who's seeing this? Where is that coming from?
So this is from Richard Wiseman's book, which is something I recommend to some of my clients. It's actually called Night School, Wake Up to the Power of Sleep. And there's a chapter at the back about lucid dreaming.
Okay. So I would want to argue with him in both of these things, yeah?
Yeah.
And I know that he's there. He's a PhD. He does his things. But I would question his premise if he understands exactly what lucid dreaming is. Yeah?
Yeah. I would recommend reading the book. I think he's got the details or the statistics from Stephen LaBerge, who Hayden had mentioned anyway. But it is actually quite interesting, and it actually even gives you a beginner's guide to lucidity.
Yeah.
So there you go. So he's taking it, and he's dealing with it very seriously. He's one of our most well-known, recognised social scientists or social psychologists. So there you go. So yeah, I wasn't. It was one of the topics. I'm sceptical on most topics, as you know, Bob. I'm actually quite open and interested in it. So.
No, you said something interesting there, Nick. You said you're quite sceptical of most topics, and you are. I think that's really good. What you said earlier, and where I think you got it wrong, is you said, you know, I'm a cynic, and actually you're not a cynic. The cynics have absolutely no value in this world. Yeah. But you are a skeptic, and that's good. Now, there's a difference. People need to know that.
You know what, Bob? My vocabulary was really doing well this episode.
Mm-hmm.
You even complimented on earlier on.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting all tongue-twisted. You've just told me.
Yes, but again, Nick, every adversity has a seed of an equivalent or greater benefit. So I'm hoping this is helping you. Yeah.
Oh,
you're not a cynic. You're not a cynic. You're a raving skeptic, and that's lovely.
A raving sceptic. I like it as well. A raving sceptic. Right. Yeah. I'm going to have a T-shirt printed with that on.
Anyway, great that Hayden was here. And, we'll get him back on. And maybe the next one, we'll see where his workshop is going to be in 2018. Nick, we're going to go on it together, you and I. We're going to go on Hayden's workshop. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be somewhere, we reckon, between Southampton and London.
Yep.
And I cannot recommend enough for people to get involved in this amazing thing that's called lucid dreaming. I think we're all lucid dreamers. We just need to know how to do it.
So, and as we mentioned in the interview, we have got an email address that people can email Hayden if they've got any more questions as well, which was outofbodystudies@gmail.com. One word, out of body studies. So, Bob, you're up. It's that time again. It's that time again when we ask you a question that has come in from one of our hordes of fans.
Do you know I forgot all about that? I'm pouring myself a beer right now. I thought it was all over.
No. We still have that Ask Bob section. But
let's do it.
Let's have our regular security guy just give the introduction.
Fair enough.
We don't know who you are. We don't know what you want. If you are looking for ransom, we can tell you now. Bob's Scottish. He won't pay. But what Bob does have are a very particular set of therapy skills. Skills he has acquired over many centuries. Skills that make him a nightmare for people like you. Now, if you send Bob a sensible question, that'll be the end of it. We will not look for you. We will not pursue you. We will try to answer it. But if you don't, we will look for you. We will find you. And we will kill you.
So there you go. You've been warned. We want proper questions, or we will find you. And we will kill you. So anyway, Bob, this question this week actually came from someone from the convention. And it was actually quite topical because it was an issue that someone raised to me, and then, lo and behold, Larry Leeson from Leamington Spa actually then asked me the question, which is it right, or what are your views on touching of clients? Is it right to, and what are your views on touching clients?
Okay. Now, this is an interesting one. I've got a fair idea how you pulled this, because I think we're okay to say this. I'll just keep talking. We might have to edit this out. I hope we don't. I hope I can just go in and say this. There was, at the end of all, in fact, during the convention, you get little notes passed to you.
Yeah.
Letting people know. What are they called? They're called the reviews?
Meet me in room 107.
No, but you get the thing when someone's finished doing a...
Feedback forms,
yeah. And in one of them, I know for a fact that you got something from a woman who mentioned that I had touched without asking, and it was inappropriate, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to get embarrassed here, by the way. We're not going to mention any names. It's not going to happen. And in fact, can I say very quickly, that if that lady is listening to this right now, if that woman's listening, can I just say, well done you. Absolutely well done you for stepping forward and doing something and making a declaration that you believe that you saw happen. Now, very quickly, if I can say to the folks, it wasn't quite like that. First of all, I did ask for permission. It was two taps on the left knee. Anyone who knows my work knows that I do this. They also know I'm scripted. I couldn't forget to ask if I wanted to. And as far as the tugging of the woman, she was standing in front of a board, and she stepped back every now and again because she saw the audience watching. And I would pull her forward, and I'd see every now and again, I'd say, where are you going? Where are you? And I'd pull her back. It became a comedic thing. The audience seemed to laugh. They seemed to find it funny. This woman never, and she felt I had touched inappropriately on the knee by tapping without asking. So well done you. In this case, it doesn't matter what it was. It doesn't. And I spoke to the lady, and you know, Nick, the lady I was supposed to have in touch, and she's absolutely great. And she says, no, I've never harmed anything like that. But in all fairness to the woman, she reported what she saw. Mm-hmm. She saw somebody without asking, tapping somebody, a female, on the knee. So whoever you are, well done you. Back to the question itself. It's simple, but it's complicated. Nick, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, I normally touch in three areas. I like to touch on the left knee. That's the anchor when I'm talking to the subconscious.
Yep.
Yeah. So my line is always, in a moment, I'd like to touch you very lightly outside, and I mention this, outside the left knee. Will that be okay? They say yes. I say, it'll be like yes. Tap twice. Will that be okay? That's fine. I may touch your hand like this. Will that be okay? They say fine. I may put my hand on your right shoulder like this. Will that be okay? They say fine. I say that's okay. When your eyes are closed, I may or may not do that. I hardly ever do it, but I want to for reasons. The hand is, of course, to lift the hand,
mm-hmm.
to drop it for deepeners.
Yep.
And the shoulder is to breathe up and breathe down as I gently push on the shoulder. It's a convincer, but I always ask for permission. So it's a fairly straightforward one for me, yeah, that I think it is okay. Some people are absolutely against it, and I think they're okay to be that way. Here's an interesting one for you, Nick. This was on forums where you get a lot of people saying that they record their sessions. Every single session they do, they record the session. They record it or even film the session. I would never do that because I can't see a reason in it. And I'm delighted. I'd be delighted if people wrote in and told me where I'm wrong here, because I would get to learn, and I'm sure I can't learn. But let me tell you the reason why I wouldn't do it, because all that does is prove that at that point in time, the therapist did nothing wrong. Anybody could then say, yeah, but what happened when they pressed the stop button? What happened then? So it only shows that from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock, everything was okay. You know what? I've done thousands upon thousands upon thousands of therapies. And apart from something silly that happened, we might get involved in it one day and talk about it. I've never had any complaint. I've never had the problems everybody thinks is going to be there. And it comes into rapport, knowing what you're doing, knowing how to handle it. I mean, I am a hugger, but I stopped being a natural hugger a couple of years ago when I hugged a woman and she says, to be honest with you, I'm not really a lover at this. And I went, ooh. I went back, told my Mrs. Lee, and she says, yeah, you're right. You shouldn't be doing that. So I stand down, I wait, and they come. They'll normally come if they want a hug or if they don't. It's a small thing to me, but a big thing to the person who doesn't like being hugged. Yeah?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think, first of all, you mentioned the inductions.
Yeah.
I do a similar thing. Not all the time now, because I don't do so many ritualistic or formal inductions as I used to, but occasionally I will slip into an ailment or this, that and the other, and there'll be a wrist drop in, and as you say, and also you've got the idiomotor responses. I sometimes use fingers. I'll tap on the shoulder and what have you. And sometimes I won't. I totally hear what you're saying. I'm probably totally in agreement with everything. I'd love to be able to challenge you. I do understand the merits of recording sessions. I mean, as you know, I work from two places, the home where I am now and the office up in the city. The office up in the city is a bit different because there's scheduling, people going in and out and this, that and the other. I've got a level of protection for myself as a therapist being there as well. At home, empty house, someone comes round, I do occasionally make it clear that the option is there for something to be recorded, so I can record. I've also got a security camera up in the corner of the room. Mm-hmm. So,
but that will be for a different reason. Something you can take from the recording for therapeutic purposes. I get that. I was talking about the ones who record it to prove that they never did anything inappropriate. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah, and it is very hard. It is very hard because, like you said, there is that whole missing area, and that's inevitably when you're going to be accused of doing something. If you are. Here's a question though. Now, Bob, you are a natural flirt.
Jesus, for God's sake, you are. Man, you can't.
People can't see it now, but you're actually fluttering your eyelids at me and pouting.
I'm doing no.
Let's actually turn my stomach.
I'm doing no such thing.
Oh, wow. Well, there we go.
Can you remember the question?
I think I can. So, anyway, the question is this. I'm quite flirtatious as well. I don't invade people's space to be flirtatious, but I'll have banter with people and this and the other. I try and put people at ease. Man or woman, whoever it is, now, I have had clients flirt with me, male and female. I think one day I might discuss one of them. You obviously know one of the stories that I told you before. Is there something that you make a point of doing in a situation where you're getting signals from a client that they think you're flirting or they're trying to flirt with you?
Yes, it's a very important area, this. So first of all, just before we slide into that, let's talk about having an open or closed personality. Yep. Let's talk about being loud or being quiet. Let's talk about being extrovert or introvert. So for example, if I want a really nice life on forums or whatever, all I've got to do is keep my mouth closed and I will never ever have a problem. The minute you open your mouth to say or give your opinion anything, that will be a percentile. It's right there. It's going to hammer you. So I get hammered more than most people I know. And I get it. I find it quite funny now. But a lot of the time when I get hammered, I deserve it. Mm-hmm. And somebody will tell me something I was wrong. And I was wrong. But the only reason why I'm better now is because I opened my mouth, somebody slapped me, put me right, and I think, wow, great, I learned from there. So I would say to everybody, open your mouth and talk. In that area, get involved. But now to slide into this thing about this horrendous area of attraction from a client, we call it certainly more so in analysis than anything else. We call it transference. Yeah. So I have had now before anybody poo-hoos and starts laughing at me, let me complete the paragraph and not just the sentence. Okay. So I have had lots of people I think fall in love with me. In therapy, you're recognizing, yeah? Like, okay, you're sitting there shaking your head back and forth. Nick, this is not helping. No, but you know what I'm saying.
In self-hypnosis.
You realise, if you know anything about anything, you know when someone's...
I know.
So much coming on to you, but something amazing's happened. I witnessed this for the first time 25 years ago, when a guy called, let's call him Tony, down south in Hampshire, told me that this young girl, he was having a problem because of transference and she was in love with him. And I giggled. And he says, you don't believe me? He invited me to come for a session and I could sit in and watch his session. In fact, it was the idea that gave me the idea that everyone being trained should get to see sessions with a good mentor. Mm-hmm. Not as a student, but as a colleague, yeah? Mm-hmm. As a consultant, as a visiting consultant. And I watched this girl, and even with me in the room, she couldn't help batting her eyelids at him and what have you. And let's say, I'm not saying he was an ugly man, but you could, seriously, you could draw a better looking guy with your left foot. I mean, he was, and we used to joke, I mean, Tony and I used to joke with this. You know, he would say, I mean, look at me, look at the state of me. Yeah, this girl's in love with me. And then what is it? I said, well, I knew what it was, but I'd never witnessed it before. Transference. In fact, it was closer to over 30 years ago. Mm. Transference, he says. And of course, from transference, Nick, we go into cross transference. And that's when you, as the therapist, a lot of people don't want to admit this, but you find yourself really close to this particular client, mm-hmm. to an area where you know there's something that's just pushing it a wee bit more than would be. You're only human, don't worry about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what to do there. The answer is stop. To sort if it's got to that area, you have to refer to someone else.
Yeah.
So there's transference and there's cross transference. That's when they fancy you. Mm-hmm. Now there's a second type of transference. And that's when they transfer their feelings of unhappiness because they don't think it's working as well as it is, and it's your fault. So they transfer the blame onto the therapist. And that is a real problem. And back to what you said a minute ago, Nick, when you said you had like what Americans would call a home office. Some people work from home. There is a danger in working from home always. Mm-hmm. And the danger of working from home is they know where you live. So if you've got somebody that's either in love with you or blames you for whatever, and they're maybe not the best balance, let's say, mm-hmm. you can be having a dinner party at 10 o'clock with friends on a Saturday night, and your doorbell will go, and they'll be stood there telling you they're having some challenges at this time. And again, trust me, I've had that. Mm-hmm. So I don't work from home anymore, mainly because of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mainly because of that, yeah.
I've stopped having dinner parties. But no, it's absolutely true, and I think that's why, even though it's for effect, and it's not actually, it is recording, but I could, the security camera is one of those ones where I could hit record very discreetly, if a situation arose where there was flirting or inappropriate language or the conversation diverted legally. I'll be honest with you, I don't know where I stand with that, but ultimately, I just want to cover my arse, so that's why that is there.
Yeah.
The other camera is on the desk. It's pointed at the therapy chair and the chair that I'd sit in, and yeah, mainly that would be done purely with permission. There'll be a media form disclaimer, and it will either be for my own training to where I can scrutinise where I'm going wrong, or occasionally for demonstrations for people that I'm mentoring or whatever. But it's a tricky one, getting the balance right of putting people at ease and putting people too at ease occasionally. And when you're two ruggedly handsome chaps like ourselves, Bob.
Yeah. And I'm not even wearing product. Look at this.
No, that is all real.
Look at it. Woo!
Wow. That is just amazing. There's some real Howard Keel action going on up there.
But serious, that happens. It doesn't matter how you look, how you are, whatever. Every therapist that I know, every working therapist of some experience at some point will come across this transference, and it's not good.
Hey, Bob, here's an important thing, which I don't mind overrunning to discuss as well. We have already overrun, but here's a quick thing as well. We're talking in terms of therapy, but this is really important because it was actually in a training situation where the conversation arose from at the weekend. And that's something to bear in mind as well. When you're a trainer, when you're doing demonstrations, when you're giving people sets of skills and tools or what have you, or just being in a position of power of being up there as the focal point running the room, that transference can happen with students as well. And I think it's important to point out the responsibility that trainers have of not taking advantage of their position.
Mm-hmm. You know, if we continue this long enough, we'd go into, and it's very important what you said, that their position. I was watching Question Time last night, mm-hmm. and they were talking about the thing that's happening right now with, the sexual thing that's happening with the stars and our government, our Tory party right now. And somebody said, I can't remember who said it, they said, but it came across as it only happens from the top down. It's a thing of power. Well, I know who it was. It's that girl that does the house show. She was on last night. I can't remember her name.
Kirsty.
Yeah, Kirsty something. She said it's all about, I think it is Kirsty Allsop, it's all about power. You won't get somebody sexually harassing someone who who's in control of them. They're both, okay, we're going to get exceptions to the rule, but yeah. they will be very, very small exceptions to the rule. It's a thing of power. When someone has power over someone, then the sexual thing could slide in them. I thought it was interesting and worth having a debate with on its own.
Oh yeah, maybe I actually think this could fill a whole show. Well, I think it could fill a couple of shows. So let's just put that on the back burner. But yeah, this abuse of power, and some people do it and they don't even know they're doing it. I think that they get slightly intoxicated with the power and the influence that they have on people.
In fact, can I say something now, Nick? We're not going to do it in this show, but next week, for anyone who's listening, I'll talk about me watching somebody doing this one and how me and my wife were sat there watching it happen, and I got angrier and angrier at the abusive power at doing the swan. And it's a story that, you know, a lot of people would like to hear, I think, yeah? So keep up for next week.
So yeah, let's do that next week. Let's make next week a little bit contentious.
Yeah.
Because it's going to probably raise a few hackles, some of the stuff. And let's just get a load of stuff out in the open next week. How about that, Bob?
Okay, cool.
But, yep, so I'm going to hold you to that. You're going to tell us the story of when you were angry watching the Swan demo. And you know what? I think we're pretty much out of time, Bob. In fact, we've overrun again because we are the world's worst time team. We just
overdeliver. It's not good. We are completely up our own backsides. We don't overdeliver. We're up our backsides. We're going to have to do something about this. It's ridiculous, you know?
Do you know what? How about we play a man who's really up his backside just to sign us off this week? How about that?
Stick him on. Should we say goodbye to the people first of all?
Let's do it.
Catch you next week, guys.
Catch you next week. Thanks for bearing with us as we overrun again. Bob, I'll see you next week.
All the best, Nick.
It's the Donald here, okay? Thanks for listening. I think these guys, Nick and Bob, I think they're great. Really, really great. I do. So join me and them next week, okay?
Mr. Burns, you're getting better. It's before midnight. Okay. You want me to put a link up to the try it out section on www.talkhypnosis.net? Okay. Why can't you put the link? She won't let you go on the laptop. Why won't she let you go on the laptop? He was looking at what? Oh, I see. Oh, okay, I'll put a link up. Okay.